We have reached the final segment, and at least half of you are still awake, which is a good sign. And we will be handling the book of Ruth. There are two books in the Bible with names of women. Ruth, a Gentile, marries a Hebrew husband, and Esther, a Jewish, marries a Gentile husband. Two tokens that the Gentiles, all the nations, were to be blessed, but only through Abraham's seed. Genesis 12:13 there, Joni.
And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed.
But all families, doesn't matter. The potential is there to be blessed. All right, 18:18, Abby.
I just put a chip in my mouth.
I know, that's why I called you.
Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him.
Right, through Abraham, that's where the blessing will come. Genesis 26:4, Whitney.
And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed.
Hallelujah. Okay, the book of Ruth is actually a great love story. So Ruth 1:1 opens with, Now it came to pass in the days. Now that little opening, that statement, occurs five times in the Bible. And it always denotes impeding trouble, impending trouble, followed by happy deliverance. So, and it came to pass. And then I gave you the record. Genesis 14:1, Esther, Isaiah, and Jeremiah. So we read verses 1:1 and 1:2. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land of Palestine, the land of Canaan, the promised land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, which means, my God is king. And the name of his wife was Naomi, which means pleasant, or my pleasant one. And the name of the two sons was Mahlon, sick, and Chilion, pining. Those were two kids, sick and pining. Have you met my children? Sick and pining? Pining. Pining. As you do pine away, you kind of wither away. And yeah. All right. And they came into the country of Moab, and they continued there. The reason this man and his two sons went to Moab was because there was a famine in the land of Palestine. He was concerned about his family, as all good fathers and husbands are. He wanted the best for them, so he moved to where there was food, and he set up housekeeping there for a while. There's no jobs anywhere. Sometimes you move looking for one. You need to be able to take care and provide for your family. So he went to Moab. He looked on monster.com and found the potential for a job, and so he moved to Moab. All right. Genesis 19:30 to 38. We're going to do some background here, which, again, this is not rated. This is Old Testament rated. So we'll go ahead and read this through. Genesis 19:30 to 38. Is that in your syllabus?
No.
Okay. Then you'll have to look it up. All right. Richard, go ahead. You get to be the Genesis 19:30 to 38.
And Lot went up out of...
Okay, hang on one quick second. Let me set this pace for you. These angels appeared and said, you ought to leave Sodom because I'm going to blow it up. And Lot kind of went, okay. And eventually Lot got out of there, but his wife didn't. She turned into a pillar of salt somewhere in the Dead Sea. You can still find her. Then all the earth seemed to have blown up. That's the background, because the five cities of the plain, Sodom, Gomorrah, and all of them, including the little town, when they left Sodom, they went to a small town, and then they left that real quickly, and it blew up because of it raining fire and brimstone. So it looks like the entire world has been destroyed by fire. The only three people that are going to be left now is going to be Lot and his two daughters. That's the background of why they're up in a cave and why the events happened. Go ahead.
And Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain, and his two daughters with him, and he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. And the firstborn said unto the younger, our father is old, and there is not a man in the earth to come in unto us after the manner of all the earth.
Right, because the whole earth had just been blown up, all five cities. All they knew, it was gone. It was destroyed. There's nobody left.
Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may
preserve
seed of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night. And the firstborn came in and lay with her father. And he perceived not when she lay down, nor when she arose. And it came to pass on the morrow that the firstborn said unto the younger, Behold, I lay yesternight with my father. Let us make him drink wine this night also. And go thou in and lie with him, that we may persevere the seed of our father.
Preserve.
Yeah. And they made their father drink wine that night also. And the younger arose and lay with him. And he perceived not when she lay down, nor when she arose. Thus were both the daughters lost with child by their fathers. And the firstborn bare a son, and called his name Moab, the same as the father of Moabites.
The Moabites.
And the younger, she also bare a son, and called his name Benami.
Yeah, that's close enough. He plays outfield for
the children of the Ammon unto this day.
Okay, so this is where Moab and Ammon came from. All right, so they're basically related. All right.
Basically.
I'm being kind here. All right. So, but the point is, this is who these people are. Okay, so now Abraham's nephew was Lot, and now Lot's grandchildren are Ammon and Moab. The Moabites were direct offspring then of Lot with his oldest daughter, and they dwelt on the other side of the Jordan River. If you have a map, which you do, you will notice, here's Ammon, here is Moab. This is where their descendants live, because guess what? There were more people on the earth still, even though they didn't know that. So Ammon, Moab. So the Moabites lived here. The Ammonites were over here. So how close were they to the tribes of Reuben and Gad and Manasseh? They were all, they intermingled quite a bit. All right? Okay. Now, we're going to go to Deuteronomy 23. Is that in your syllabus? It's supposed to be. Deuteronomy 23, 3 and 4.
Nope.
You don't have it?
Nope.
Yeah, it's on the next page.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought.
It looked like a paragraph. Yeah.
I did. I read the paragraph. What I just said. Ammon, Moab. Moab. That's the paragraph. Okay. Deuteronomy 23, 3 and 4. All right, Les, what's it say?
Ammonite and Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord, even to their tenth generation. Shall they not enter into the congregation of the Lord forever?
I would say that God's probably not pleased with them. It's kind of what it looks like. All right, next verse will tell us why.
Because they met you not with bread and with water in the way, when ye come forth out of Egypt, and because they hired against Balaam, the son of Beor, Mesopotamia, to curse thee.
It's almost not really a nice thing to read because some of all the different names that are hard to pronounce. So anyway, when Moses wanted to go through the land of the Moabites and the Ammonites, when he was trying to head to the over here to the promised land, he had to go through their land. All right? They refused him entree into their land. They should have allowed him, but not only should they have allowed him, but they should have met him with bread and water. Since bread would have been salted, this type of a greeting would have consisted of making a salt covenant with them, so they would have to protect each other. It would have been a good treaty. Since they were related through Abraham's nephew Lot, partaking of the salted bread would mean they could trust each other. Instead, the Moabites refused to recognize and help the children of Israel. So God said, from now on, never let the Moabites even enter into the congregation of the Lord. They, the Moabites, just cut themselves off from God's blessings because they turned against Israel. They cursed themselves with their actions. Their other transgression was that Balak, the king of Moab, tried to hire Balaam to curse Israel. He was a spiritualist for hire. He knew how to operate double spirits, basically, and you'd hire him to curse a family or to curse a nation. He knew all the little he had a book of incantation, so to speak. He knew all these different ways. Well, with this God, you say this prayer and you do this thing. With this God, you kneel three times, you genuflect, you do the sign of the cross, just whatever. It's just he knew them all, and he had it all down. Okay, so Deuteronomy 5 and 6, 23, 5 and 6 now. So it's right there in front of us. Okay, Becca, could you read those?
Nevertheless, the Lord thy God would not hearken unto Balaam, but the Lord thy God turned the curse into a blessing unto thee, because the Lord thy God loved thee. Thou shalt not seek their peace nor their prosperity all thy days forever.
Okay, so God is laying it out. An Ammonite or a Moabite, who are all the descendants who came out of Lot, basically, were never to be blessed because they treated the children of Israel shabbily, and they even hired somebody to try and curse them when they got there. You shouldn't even seek their peace, which means no peace treaty. You shouldn't even seek their prosperity, which means you don't even trade with them. You don't even build a Walmart in their town. All right? That's what they're telling you. That's a big deal. Thou shalt not seek their peace. Thou shalt not seek their prosperity all the days forever. So Balak had asked Balaam to come and put a curse upon Israel. Balaam wanted the money and the prestige that Balak was offering, but God said his people were blessed so they couldn't be cursed. Instead, Balaam had another way. He knew another way to get to the children of Israel. He told them that they should send Moabitess women to seduce the men of Israel and get the men of Israel to worship other gods. God doesn't take kindly to people or nations that introduce idolatry into Israel. Numbers 25:1. Now, what I understand, that should be in there. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's good. So, Lindau, what does Numbers 25:1 say?
And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab.
That is, Balaam was the one who instructed them on how to do that. They went and did it. The children of Israel had illicit relations, whoredoms with the daughters of Moab. That doesn't necessarily mean that the women of Moab were prostitutes. It means that the daughters of Moab led them into worshiping other gods than the one true God, which really is much worse. So what happened in verse 2 now, Lindell?
And they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods, and the people did eat and bow down to their gods.
Right. That's what the daughters of Moab caused the children of Israel to do. Moab refused Israel permission to go through the land. And even bigger spiritually, they caused the people of Israel to worship strange gods. When you have more gods than the true God, then you are committing whoredoms. As a result, God said they were to be excluded totally from the blessing and the promises that God had placed upon Israel. Now we know what the land of Moab was like and what the Moabite people were like. So now we go back to Ruth, chapter 1, verse 2. The name of the man was Elimelech. His wife was Naomi. His two sons were Malam and Chileam. They were from Benjamin, Judah, Ephraimites. And they came into the country of Moab and they lived there. They moved to Moab. Were they supposed to be in Moab? Sure didn't look like it. But there was a famine in the land of Palestine. This man and his wife Naomi and their two sons went to the land which had a curse on it, that God had cursed, that put a curse on it. Verse 3, and Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. And the two sons took wives of the women of Moab. What was that? Exactly. Were they supposed to do that? No. And the name of the first one was Orpha, which means hind or fawn. The name of the other was Ruth, which means beauty. And they dwelt there 10 years. So they were there for 10 years. But her husband had died, and the two boys found themselves some Canaanitish women. All right. Now, actually, they weren't Canaanites. They were Moabitess women. Because Canaanitish women were forbidden. You're not supposed to marry Canaanites, but it doesn't specifically say you can't marry a Moabite. Though a Moabite man can't come into the congregation of Jehovah. Deuteronomy 7. You'll have to look this. No, is that one in there?
Yep. Yes.
Good. My markings is correct. Okay. Deuteronomy 7, 1 to 4, Jerry.
When the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it, and hath cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, The Hivites. The Jebusites.
But do you see Moabites?
No.
Okay.
Seven nations greater and mightier than thou, and when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. For they will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So will the anger of the Lord kindle against you and destroy thee suddenly.
All right, but we don't have Moabites there because they're over on the other side. They weren't in the land, they were on the other side of the Jordan River. Now, Ruth 1:5, and Mahlon and Chilion died.
Bummer.
Very bummer. Mahlon and Chilion died, also both of them. And now the woman Naomi was left of her two, she had lost her two sons, and she lost her husband. And she's got these two daughter-in-laws now that were Moabites. The deprivation of the famine that had ravaged the area of Bethlehem, Judah, had driven Elimelech and his wife Naomi, along with their two sons, to seek relief in the land of Moab. It was there that tragedy struck the life of Naomi. Her husband and her two sons died. That must have really torn her heart out. Then she arose with her daughter-in-laws, that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab how the Lord had visited the people in Palestine and was giving them food. So the famine was over with in Palestine. So now it was time to make a serious decision. So she put out her fleece. Oh, I'm sorry. All right, verse 7. Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law, those Moabite women, were with her. And they went on their way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each to your mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that you may find rest or peace, each of you in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. And they had a big loud crying time together. And everybody said, "Goodbye, we'll see you when you get back from Alaska." Or something like that. When you leave?
Wednesday.
Okay. Verse 10. And they said unto her, "Surely we will return with thee unto thy people." And Naomi said, "No, turn away, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that they may be your husbands?" Okay, what she is saying is that the law of Israel at that time was that if you were married to a son and the son died, there was another son left in the family, he would take her to wife and raise up seed on the brother's behalf. Now, you have to look this up. It's Deuteronomy 25. So the law is very complete and covers most of the stuff. That's why we need jails and prisons. So Anna would be out of work. She would have to be checking people's IDs at the cities of refuge or something, keeping their stories right. Deuteronomy 25:5. All right. Matt Wood, 25:5-10. And make sure you have a shoe loose. You'll see that.
"If brethren dwell together, and one of them die, and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her, and take her to him to wife, and perform the duty of an husband's brother unto her. And it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother, which is dead, and his name be not put out of Israel. And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate unto the elders and say, 'My husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother.' Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak unto him, and if he stand to it and say, 'I like not to take her.'"
Two more.
"Then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders, and loose his shoe from his foot and spit in his face. He shall answer and say, 'So shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house, and his name shall be called in Israel, and the house of him that hath his shoe loosed.'"
There you go. You'll be forever known as the house that has a shoe loosed. All right. They tried to trap Jesus, remember, with that? All nine of them had the girl, and then they died, and then, in the resurrection, who shall she belong to? Okay, that's off of this part of the Mosaic law, is what that was coming from. The loosing of the shoe dealt with when a rite was being passed. The custom was to give a shoe in the presence of witnesses to visually signify that that rite had been forfeited to another. We'll see this again as we continue reading. Now, back to Ruth 1. All right, so now we've got it set up. So that's what Naomi is saying is, look, I know I'm supposed to, if I don't have any more children in me, any more sons, and besides that, you'd have to wait 20 years or so before you can marry them. So just stay in Moab with your families. Go back to them. So she's being very kind and offering them a way out. So, 1:12. Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I'm too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband also tonight, and should also bear sons, would you tarry for them till they're grown? Would you stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. And they lifted up their voice, and they wept again. And Orpha kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. And she said, behold, thy sister-in-law has gone back unto her people and back unto her gods. Naomi is trying to send them both back to their pagan gods, back to their families, because the children of Moab worship more than one god. Thus Ruth would have been brought up to worship more than one god. And verse 16, Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. That's quite a declaration to her mother-in-law. It kind of shut the mother-in-law up. Stopped her insistence that she remained in Moab. But it's also one of the most beautiful and moving statements one can read. The heart of Naomi must have melted, and so she allowed Ruth to return with her. Wherever you're going to go, I'm going to go. Your people, my people. Your God, my God. What a tremendous woman then Ruth was. She had come out of a country of paganism, of worshiping other gods, a country that seduced men of Israel to worship other gods. She came out with Naomi and made the decision that rather than go back to the Moabites to serve their gods, she would go with Naomi wherever she went and serve whatever god Naomi would serve. All right, verse 17. All right, Ed, verse 17.
Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me.
All right, so she's determined to go. I'm going to be with you until you die. I'll be there all the way through it. That's a committed woman. That's a sold-out woman. That's a woman who made up her mind to listen to Naomi and to serve then the true God of Naomi. All right, verses 18 to 20, Allie.
When she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. So they two went until they came unto Bethlehem, and it came to pass, when they were come to Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them, and they said, is this Naomi? And she said unto them, call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me.
All right, don't call me pleasant. I'm not pleasant anymore. Call me Mara. I'm bitter or hurt or injured. Naomi, you're here. Don't call me Naomi. It's so good to see you. You've been gone for 10 years. How are you, Naomi? I'm bitter. Welcome home. All right. And then she says, it's God's fault. Well, she doesn't really say it that way. But let's handle that. Something isn't quite right with that last verse. The Almighty doesn't bitterly with people, doesn't deal bitterly with us. He doesn't bring sickness or death upon us. The Almighty doesn't kill our loved ones. There's a figure of speech utilized here. It's called the Hebrew idiom of permission. An idiom is a usage of a word or words particular to a language or culture. When this figure is employed, the words are not to be taken literally. Active verbs are sometimes used in the Hebrew language to express, not the doing of the action, but rather the permission of the action. Literally, this verse would read, for the Almighty has allowed me to become completely expended. God had forbidden the people to mention even the names of other gods. In your syllabus, you have Exodus 23:13? Mm-hmm. All right, Russell, could you read that for us, please?
Exodus 23:13. And in all things that I have said unto you, be circumspect, and make no mention of the name of other gods, neither let it be heard out of thy mouth.
The very form of the idiom keeps God always in control of the situation, so Satan is never glorified. 1 John 1:5, Ryan Freyart.
God is light, and in him is no darkness at all.
Just a little bit of darkness? No, none. Hebrews 2:14, Isaac.
That through death, he, Jesus Christ, might destroy him that had the power of death, that is, the devil.
Since God is light, and Satan is the cause of all sickness and death, then he doesn't cause the problem. He allows it to happen because of disobedience, unbelief, or idolatry on the individual's or the nation's part. Human beings have not changed much in all these years that separate us from Naomi. Right? They still have two legs, two eyes, two ears. Okay. She was so overwhelmed by the tragedies that had befallen her, her whole outlook regarding life had changed. When those who knew her had gathered around her after return, she asked them not to call her Naomi, which means pleasant. She wanted them to refer to her as Mara, which means bitter. Since most of us at one time or another have tasted the bitter water of adversity, I am sure we can identify with her and her tragic experiences. Back to Ruth chapter 1. We go to 21 and 22, Julie.
I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest.
The barley harvest was at the time of the Passover. Ruth 2, verse 1. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth, of the family of Elimelech. And his name was Boaz. Or if you have a footnote, his name was Booz. Booz, or Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, one of us needs to get a job. So, let me go to the field, and I will glean ears of corn, you know, it's stalks of grain, after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said, go, my daughter. Ruth went to glean in the fields in order to provide for herself and her mother-in-law. The poor people in the Orient can always glean in the fields. As a matter of fact, the harvester or the reapers purposely leave some of the harvest so widows, fatherless, and strangers may gather it, rather than standing on the street corner holding signs. This is their cultural law. It's their system of welfare. Usually there's more gleaners than reapers. So as you're going through, this is again before the internal combustion engine and the big machines, that they would be gathering everything up together and they would leave, especially as they came around. You know, your lands were square, so a lot of times in the corners you would leave a rounded area, things like that. And those were left there behind, so the gleaners, other people who weren't as fortunate, would pick it up. They would gather it together. And that's how they would get fed in that day and time. All right? So she went. She knew that, and so she went. Verse 3, and she went and came, and she gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap, her portion, her fortune, it just happened that she was to light on part of the field that belonged to Boaz. She just went to look for a field, and she just happened to cross Boaz's field, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. Elimelech, again, was her father-in-law, who was deceased. So Boaz was Ruth's husband's blood relative, and Ruth is gleaning in her fields. Verse 4, and behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless thee. Now, how many of you have bosses who greet you that way? You walk in, first day, first sergeant. Good morning, Lord be with you. Yeah, no. No. Okay, so that's probably, that doesn't happen very often. What's that? Yeah. So, good morning, the Lord be with you. Ah, the Lord be with you too. So, verse 5. That gives you a good idea right away into Boaz's heart. Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, whose damsel is this? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, It's the Moabitish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came, and hath committed, even from the morning until now, that she tarried a little in the house. She's been there all day working. She just didn't go over for a couple hours and go, temperature's getting a little hot. I'm going to go home. No, she's there all day. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, Hearest thou, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Now Ruth wasn't the actual daughter of Boaz. Any older man in the east who meets a younger woman may call her daughter. Boaz was blood related to Naomi's dead husband, not to Ruth. All right, verse 9. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged the young men that you keep your hands off of you? That's basically what he's saying. Have I not charged the young men that they should not touch you? So she's getting protected from the young bucks in the area. And when thou art athirst, go unto the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn. Then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground, and she said unto him, Why have I found grace in thy eyes? That thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger. And Boaz answered and said unto her, It hath fully, here's the real reason. It has been fully showed me that all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thy husband. They were related, remember, to the family? So when Elimelech didn't show back up again because he had died, Boaz, being a relative, would find out about it, would know who Naomi was and who Ruth was. And so basically, it was, oh, that's Ruth, huh? All right, well, let's take care of her. You know, she's semi-related, you know. She's part of my, a relative of mine. All right. But they told her the story of how she said, I'm going with you, I'll take care of you, being Naomi, the mother-in-law. And how thou hast left father, you left mother, you left the land of your nativity, and you came to a people which you knew nothing about. That's a big deal in that culture. You couldn't Google Israel. Okay, this is where we're going. This is what the land looks like. This is what the people are like. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. Then she said, Let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for that thou hast comforted me, for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thy handmaid, though I be not like the one of thy handmaidens. And Boaz said unto her, At mealtime come thou hither, and eat of the bread, dip thy morsel in the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn, right, or roasted grain, and she did eat, and was sufficed, and left. Back in your syllabus now. The New International Version reads, you know, she ate all she wanted and had some left over. She saved some of the food that was given to her for her mother-in-law, Naomi. She was thinking of Naomi, so she didn't eat it all. All the workers would bring their own meal, and they would eat with their master. There was supposed to be no difference among them. They're all on the same level. The master made sure everyone had enough to eat. Sometimes he didn't give some of his share to them. When they traveled together, the master would not accept the bed from the host if his laborers would sleep on the floor. He would sleep with them. If he is given better food, he would share it with them. Jesus said that wherever he would be, there his servant would be also, making him equal with. He makes us equal with him. So Ruth is given special favor here. The gleaners never ate with the reapers, but Ruth sat beside them and dipped her bread in the same dish with them, making her equal. Verse 15 now, 15 to 17, Lindell.
And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, Let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not, and let fall some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them, that she may glean them, and rebuke her not. So she gleaned in the field until even, and beat out that she had gleaned. And it was about an ephah of barley.
An ephah of barley. So, okay, so basically he said, drop a few extra, give her a few extras, leave them there. And if she reaches for them, just step back and let them have it. Because sometimes if they drop them, the guys would go for them, they yell at them, stay back. It's, you know, type situation there. To beat out meant she threshed the barley she was collecting by separating the chaff from the grain by beating with a stick. So she was going, she basically prepped it before she would take it home. And an ephod, defined by Douglas's New Bible Dictionary, in case you were wondering, in case you wanted to cook something, it's about 1/10 of a homer, which is a donkey load, which is about 220 liters. One ephod equates 2.2 liters, because 10 ephods equals one homer. An omer was 1/10 of an ephod, and it is the measure that was used concerning manna. We see that right here in Exodus 16:16. Joni, what does it say?
This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded, gather of it every man according to his eating, an omer for every man according to the number of your persons. Take ye every man from them which are in his tents.
All right, so, Elias, you get one omer tonight. I don't want you to eat a homer, only an omer. A homer's 10 omers. Got it? There it is. No, not 10. All right, back to Ruth. Ruth 2:18. All right, Lindahl, Ruth 2:18.
And she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. And she brought forth and gave to her that she had reserved after she was sufficed.
Okay. Ruth carried all that she had collected. She had collected much. She'd been there all day. Remember, morning till night she was there. And she collected it, then she threshed it, and then she brought all of that and showed her mother-in-law, and then she pulled out her half-eaten cheeseburger. Then she gave her what was left over from lunch. That, you know, right away, we're starting to see an insight into what Ruth was like. Hard worker, got special favor because they saw she was a hard worker, understood her story. She left things extra from lunch that she would... Remember, she was sent out to work because they didn't have any food. So she did that. She brought extra food home. And her mother-in-law, verse 19, said unto her, what hast thou gleaned today? And who wroughtest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of you. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought and said, the man's name with whom I wrought, it wasn't filled with Boaz. And Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, well, blessed be he of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said unto her, this man is near of kin unto us, one of our near kinsmen. And Ruth the Moabite said, he said unto me also, thou shalt keep thy fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest. Which means come on back every day as long as you want to. There's plenty of food for you to gather. You don't have to go from field to field looking. And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, that thou meet thee not in any other field. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest and of the wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. Remember, the barley harvest was Pentecost time. I mean, the barley harvest was Passover time. The wheat harvest came at the Pentecost time. So that's, what, 40 days, 50 days later? So she was there every day, day in and day out, except on the Sabbath, collecting and bringing food home. Now we go to chapter 3. Here we pick it up in verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, my daughter, shall I not seek rest or a home for thee, that it might be well with thee? In other words, Naomi is saying, shall I not arrange a husband for thee, for you, so you can be well provided for? According to Eastern practice, when a woman's husband dies, it's the father-in-law's responsibility to find another husband for her. Widows are never just left alone. But Elimelech was dead. So it was the deceased husband's family's responsibility to get a husband for the widow. In this case, it fell into Naomi to do it. Ruth was supposed to stay in the family until a husband was found. Ruth was keeping the tradition of remaining faithful to her husband's family. It's the duty of the next of kin, then, to arrange the marriage of relatives. Naomi instructed Ruth in exactly what to do in order to marry Boaz. It was right for Naomi to instruct Ruth, as Naomi was her closest relative at the time, though not a direct blood relative. Verse 2, Anna.
And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maiden thou wast? Behold, he
winnoweth
barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thy...
No, that's good. Easterners usually marry a kinsman, a blood relative, or distant relatives. By keeping it in the family, they are sure that the husband and wife have had the same culture, the same religious training, and all of that. This also keeps the wealth in the family. The widow is always taken care of by the family of her husband. There's no need for courting to work out differences. they have been taught marriage roles. So there's a little problem there. Since they were taught well as part of the culture, you didn't have to have any last-minute special training. Now, each village had a threshing floor on a rock. It was a well-seasoned rock located usually above the village. One would spread the crop on the threshing floor, and cows or oxen would, you know, walk on them. The weight of the animal threshes the crop, separating the grain from the stalks. There may be as many as 10 or 15 oxen walking around on the floor at one time, with the man leading them around. The oxen could not be muzzled. Now, you can see that's what's supposed to be done. And where was Gideon? In the winepress hiding, trying to do the same thing. The oxen could not be muzzled because they had a right to partake of the fruit of their labors. The laborer is worthy of his hire. Then the chaff is separated out. The good grain is gathered in things called fans, slowly poured out again so the chaff would blow away. It's an open space, and threshing was always done by moonlight. It was no secret place. Everything that took place on the threshing floor could be easily seen. It's up above the village. The boss sleeps in his clothes, spread over a pile of threshed grain. All the work is done by men in the night. No women were allowed there at nighttime. During the day, a group of single women might be there, but Ruth has no immoral purpose in mind. She was following the Oriental methods of claiming redemption. The instruction given to Ruth is immediately suspect to those who are not familiar with the customs of the Eastern people. They think Ruth is going with immoral motives to set a marriage trap for Boaz. That is definitely not the case. All right, verses 3 and 4, Lindell.
Ruth 3, 3 and 4. Wash thyself, therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man, until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in, and uncover his feet, and lie thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do.
To uncover feet refers to lying down on someone's feet in order to be redeemed. The feet were uncovered so the person could feel someone lying there. It was a common practice in claiming the next of kin for marriage. Now we use, the social networks? Okay. Verse 5, and she said unto her, all that thou sayest unto me I will do. This statement actually is made in reply to the husband's goodbye to the wife after their one-year honeymoon was over, when he left to prepare a place for them in his father's house. Ruth knew that, and saying it now was positive thinking on her part. In the Gospel of John, Jesus' statements are all based on the marriage customs. In John 14, 1-4, Luann, if you could read those.
Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And whither I go, you know, and the way you know.
Good. All right, so back to Ruth 3, 6, and 7. Deborah, if you could read those two for us, please.
And she went down into the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. And she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down.
Okay, again, that corn is grain. Now, drunk, that doesn't mean intoxicated. Culturally, they didn't drink anything until after they ate the meal. Something is drunk at the end of the meal to complete the meal. Then nothing is eaten until the next meal. A merry heart is a grateful, thankful heart. The Eastern people say grace before and after the meal. Say a man has eaten and drunk is to say he had finished his meal. And these people sleep covered from head to toe with their face covered so the sunlight or moonlight would not strike the eyes. Psalm 121:6. Travis, you want to read that for us, please?
The sun shall not smite thee by day, nor the moon by night.
Yeah, so they would cover it all up, totally. And then we go to Ruth 3:8. And Lindell, you've been the Ruth reader.
And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet.
Right, you know, he's eating, he's drunk, he's just, you know, not drinking, but I mean, he's full. He's been a hard day at work, he lies down, and all of a sudden, his feet are uncovered, and there's a woman there, he was just suddenly awakened. Boaz was frightened because there was a woman on the threshing floor, and that was improper. She was uninvited. Ruth was surrendering so that he might redeem her. Redemption is another name for marriage. Lying at the feet of a person is complete and full surrender. She must touch his feet. That's why she had to uncover his feet. And he said in verse 9, "Who art thou?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, thy handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thy handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." Boaz's skirt was his mantle, which ensured protection. The mantle was used to cover at night. During the day, it was worn from the neck down to about the knees. Throwing a mantle on someone was also a sign of calling one to a ministry. Covering a person with a mantle is assurance of protection. Remember, that's one of the first things Jael did with Sisera. This is what Ruth is asking for. She wanted an assurance of redemption and protection through marriage. She did not ask for an agreement of words because the assurance was sufficient. Redemption is a part of marriage for a widow. The Eastern widow has no status. She is in a lowly position. When she's married again, she is redeemed from that lowly position. Okay, verse 10, Deborah.
"And he said, Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich."
Right, she wasn't out in the clubs at nighttime. She, you know, when a man calls a woman a daughter or sister, he'll treat her as such. It turns away immorality. He cannot make any advances towards her. When a man calls another man brother, it means that he forgives him of any wrong or insult. All past mistakes are gone. Verse 11 now, Deborah.
"And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman."
A woman of noble character. Proverbs 12:4, Ed.
"A virtuous woman is a crown to her husband, but she that maketh ashamed is as rottenness in his bones."
And in the end, here's the verse in the NIV. Why don't you read that?
"A wife of noble character is her husband's crown, but a disgraceful wife is like decay in his bones."
I think you can see the difference quite clearly here. And of course, Proverbs 31:10. And Linda, if you could read that one.
"Find a virtuous woman, for her price is far above rubies."
If you can find a virtuous woman, hang on to her, because she is a rare but extremely valuable find. This is what the whole town thought of Ruth, that she possessed the qualities that make for a virtuous woman, as described in detail in the following verses of Proverbs 31. The way in which Naomi felt she could find relief for Ruth from the work she was doing was through the kinsman of her deceased husband, Boaz. Ruth had already found special favor in his eyes. He had instructed the young men to keep their hands off. He had showed compassion for herself, for himself. Wait a minute. He had showed compassion for her, himself, and Naomi. He sat with her at mealtime. He treated her as an equal. He recognized her as a relative. The kinsman redeemer had to have at least three qualifications. Loads of cat. No, no. He must be a close kinsman. He must be able to pay the redemption price, and he must then be willing to do so. When a kinsman came along who met the qualifications of a redeemer, they could go look at the public copy, and he could see what was necessary to redeem the property. If he was able and willing to pay the price, the seven seals were then opened as a sign that the mortgage had been released. That is what we have in chapter 5 of the book of Revelation. The book or the scroll with seven seals always has to do with redemption of land. God is ready for his people to possess the earth and exercise the dominion over it, which since Adam has been in the hands of the god of this world, who is also called Satan. The search is launched for a kinsman to redeem the earth, to pay off the mortgages, as it were, so God's people can inherit the earth. John wept because no one was found in heaven. In the earth or under the earth, you met the conditions of a redeemer so as to enable him to pay off the mortgage and break the seven seals as evidence that they had been done. But there was good news for John from one of the elders. Revelation 5:5, Robin.
"And one of the elders saith unto me, Weep not. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, hath prevailed to open the book and to loose the seven seals thereof."
Right, so that record in Revelation is indicative of buying back the earth through what Christ accomplished. Christ met the qualifications. He is the near kinsman. He is the kinsman redeemer for the human family. Yeah. Hebrews 2:14, Whitney.
For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, and through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is the devil.
Right. And John 1:14, Elias.
And the word was made flesh, then and dwelt among us.
Right. He was willing and able in the prophecy to take back the earth from under the dominion of Satan for his people. Shall we say hallelujah?
Hallelujah.
Absolutely. That which is now prophetic will one day become a reality, and then Matthew 5:5 happens. What does it say, Becca?
Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth.
Hey, guess what? We'll get the earth after global warming.
Yay.
All right. Back to Ruth, after it's totally cleansed. Ruth 3:12. Robin, Ruth 3:12.
And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I.
Sounds like somebody had done some research already. Boaz had already been checking the files to see where he was on the pecking order, so to speak. So he knew what was going on. This, you know, this wasn't illicit. Anything about this was wrong. He'd already knew, but there was a problem. Boaz wanted to marry Ruth, but since there was a nearer kinsman, that man had a legal right to marry her. Boaz had to see if the man would relinquish his authority to marry Ruth. So we go to verses 13 and 14. All right. Julie, read 13 and 14 for us.
Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto thee the part of the kinsman well, let him do the kinsman part. But if he will not do the part of the kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of the kinsman to thee. As the Lord lives, lie down until the morning. And she lied as sweet until the morning, and she rose up before one could know another. And he said, let it not be known that a woman came unto the floor.
Right. Because women were not allowed on the threshing floor according to etiquette. Ruth and Boaz did not want anyone to know she was there. So, you know, in the, you know, 4:30, 5 o'clock, in the little fog, she gets up and she sneaks back down. Runs back down. Verse 15, and he also, though, before she left, he said, bring your veil. It's not the veil, as I'll see in a minute, her robe or shawl, that thou hast upon thee, and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. She went back into the city. All right. A veil is a small cloth incapable of holding 6 measures of barley. It also has holes in it, so it couldn't hold grain. The veil here should be the robe. The woman wore long robes. She could lift it up a little to form a fold. We see this custom in the Gospel of Luke, where it says, given to your bosom. That's how the grain was carried sometimes. Here you got Luke 6:38 in your syllabus. Good. Michelle, could you read it for us?
Given it shall be given unto you, good measure, pressed down, and shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that it met with Dale, it shall be measured to you again.
Right. So sometimes you don't have your clothes basket with you, and you're picking grain up, and so you just kind of pull your robe up and pour it into your bosom, and you carry it on that way. All right, back to Ruth 3, 16 and 17. Laurel, if you could read those two.
And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, who art thou, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, these 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said to me, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law.
Right, so she comes back, and Naomi goes, how do things go? Whenever a person went home, they were supposed to carry something to the family, and that's what she did with the 6 grains, with the 6 measures of barley. Verse 18, then she said, okay, sit still, my daughter, until thy know how the matter will fall, for this man will not be in rest until we have finished the thing today. This means to be at peace. Be confident. Don't be troubled in your mind. Not just physically. Sit down and just wait, little lady. You know, no. It's just be calm, relax. Boaz will figure it out today. You'll have an answer. There was one problem for Boaz. There was a closer kinsman than he who had the right of first refusal. If he chose to exercise his prerogative as the closest kin, then Boaz would not be able to do so. The next morning, Boaz went to the gate of the city. That's where the elders of the city met to discuss any problems which were presented to them. You could probably equate the elders of the gate to the city council. Finally, the other kinsmen came by, and Boaz called them to one side. He then collected 10 of the elders, and they sat down together to have a conversation and as witness as to what was going on. Chapter 4. Then went Boaz up to the gate, and he sat him down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, "Ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down, have a cup of coffee." And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city, and said, "Would you please sit down too?" So they all sat down. And he said unto the kinsman, "Naomi, that has come again out of the country of Moab, sells a parcel of land which is our brother Elimelech. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, buy it before the inhabitants, before the elders of my people. If thou will redeem it, redeem it. If thou will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there is none to redeem it beside thee, and I'm after thee." And he said, "Oh, piece of land? I'll buy it." Then says Boaz, "What day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth, the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance." That changes the picture a little bit. You not only get the land, you get the woman who goes with the land. And the kinsman said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar my own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it." Now this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing. For to confirm all things, a man plucked off his shoe, gave it to his neighbor, and this was a testimony in Israel. Therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, "Buy it for thee." So he drew off his shoe. And Boaz said unto the elders and unto all the people, "You are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's, all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's, of the hand of Naomi." Now, in your syllabus, when he decided that he did not want the whole package, he then took off his shoe and gave it to Boaz in the presence of the elders. Why the shoe? What's the significance? When a person bought oxen, land, houses, or anything that's tangible, a bill of sale would be given, and a transaction would be made as a matter of record, much the same as today. But when an intangible was transferred, such as a right, which was here being passed, then the custom was to give a shoe in the presence of witnesses to signify that the right had been forfeited to another. This is what the kinsman did in this case. And it was well understood by all those who were looking on that Boaz now had the right not only to buy all the property, their land, which had belonged to Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon, but also to claim the hand of Ruth in marriage. And this he did. I was wondering if they gave the shoe back at the end of the agreement. Oh, by the way, here, have your shoe back. I'm going to do a one shoe. What a beautiful end for these women who had seemed to be hedged in by tragedy and defeat. The bitterness of Naomi once again turned to pleasantness because her faith was in the God who never fails his people. And Ruth, who had made the God of Naomi her God, she is now living amongst his bountiful supply. You will never fail if you go with God. There may be times of disaster. There may be events that try your patience and faith in God. You may have to walk through flood and flame. It may seem there's no hope, but God never fails because he is God. Give him a chance. When you depend on him for your all, this truth will become yours experientially. Once you have had experience of the miraculous provision of God, you can then have hope in the next confrontation with the impossible. Soon your faith will be so strong you will stand as a mighty rock against the cutting sands hurled unto you by adverse winds. And you will not be moved, for you know there's no one else to whom you can go. Ruth 4 now, 10 through 13, Robin.
"Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren, and from the gate of his place. Ye are witnesses this day. And all the people that were at the gate and the elders said, We are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which two did build the house of Israel. And do thou worthily in Ephratah, and be famous in Bethlehem. And let thy house be like the house of Pharaohs, whom Tamar barren to Judah of the seed which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman. So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife, and when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son.
What a tremendous man Boaz must have been. He knew she was a Moabitess. He knew her background, but because she was the daughter-in-law of Naomi, who was a relative of his, he took Ruth to wife. For a believer to take a woman from Moab, an unbeliever, one whom God had thrown out of the congregation of Israel as his wife, illustrates what type of a man Boaz must have been. All right, Robin, 14 to 17.
And the woman said unto Naomi, Blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. And Naomi took the child, and laid it in her bosom, and became nurse unto it. And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, There is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed, and he is the father of Jesse, the father of David.
Gee, you wonder why the book of Ruth is in here. This Moabitess woman named Ruth had said to Naomi, Whithersoever thou goest, I will go. Thy people shall be my people. Thy God shall be mine God. God had said that they should have no favor in Israel, no entrance even into the congregation. Yet here's a woman who gets married to Boaz and has a baby named Obed, who has a son Jesse, who has a son David, which is in the Christ line. She went from being a stranger in a foreign land to becoming a direct ancestor of Jesus Christ. God didn't want the nation of Moab mixed in with the congregation of Israel because they hurt God's people and were worshiping pagan gods. But here's an individual, rather than a nation, who switched gods, and God honored her life and believing by having a child that was in the Christ line. God looks upon the heart of a person. Ruth, like Rahab, had a heart that was committed to the one true God. She could have left Naomi, been on her own, but she chose to live with God's people and serve the true God. Then there was Boaz. He saw the virtuous woman qualities of Ruth, so he redeemed her. Out of that marriage of a Moabite woman who was not allowed in the congregation of Israel, out of her came our wonderful Savior, Jesus Christ. Doesn't matter where you have been in the past, doesn't matter how many gods you worshipped or how messed up you were or anything else. What matters is when you turn to God and to the Lord Jesus Christ, then God forgives and God forgets all of your past transgressions. This record of Ruth and Boaz, only God could conceive because of his great grace and because of his great love. There's a record in Matthew 15 about a Canaanitish woman, a Gentile, who settled for scraps off the master's table, but she had enough believing to get her daughter delivered. Our God took us when we were dead in trespasses and sins, without God and without hope, and he got us born again, with Christ in us, the hope of glory, giving us eternal life. That's even bigger than the Ruth and Boaz story. Our God's a good God. Our God's a delivering God. Our God's a saving God. Our God wants his best for all the people of the world, but only those who believe his word and act upon it actually receive God's best. So, all right. All right, let's close with prayer. Father, thank you for putting all these stories in here that are true and how we can see how miraculous you were to start with Joshua, to get him ready for what he needed to do, for all the different ways that you made the promised land just that, a promised land of milk and honey for your people. And we see the disobedience, Father, and we don't want to be like that. We want to be people who line up with your word and live serving you, the true God, and not fall for the tricks of pleasure and pressure that the adversary throws at us. We're thankful, Father, then, for understanding of the different judges, of how people are people, and if they're left without the word, your word, that they do fall away. But we have your word, and we're grateful that we can live with what your word says, and that we can then be shining beacons to others in this day and time. Like those who stood on your word, people like Boaz and then Rahab and those who decided because they saw what it was to belong to you, that they saw all of that and great things happened because of it. We're grateful, Father, then to understand that you do look on individual hearts and that you have great things in store for each and every person here as they too confess what your word says and live it to the best of their ability, knowing that your son is coming back. And knowing that you have great love for us now and you want us to be prosperous and healthy as we go by every day worshiping you, and then having the right of being able to reconcile men and women back to you. We're grateful, Father, for once again all this great word, and that we can take it to heart and we can live it and teach others in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. All right. Oh, I'm glad you guys came on up.
Well, I'm glad you made it available.
My dad was telling me, sometimes in life, you...